This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
One index that could tell us about unemployment.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, it's the Morning Open. Good morning, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Financial reform gets an introduction. And Google and China, no love lost there. All that coming up. First, where's Wall Street? Markets are pretty much flat right now. The S&P off by about 0.04%. Same for the NASDAQ. The Dow is up about 10 points at 10,634, a tepid opening this morning for the markets. European shares off about 0.33% or less. And shares in Asia were mostly mixed today. It's not one of those numbers you huddle around the radio waiting for, but the Empire State Manufacturing Survey may prove to be quite the predictor when it comes to the unemployment picture moving forward. Bill Stone is Chief Investment Strategist at PMC Wealth Management. He's with us live from Philadelphia this morning. Morning, Bill.
Good morning.
Why do we care about the Empire State Manufacturing Index, some obscure index that comes out of nowhere?
Well, you're right. I mean, as much as we love our friends in New York, I think on the whole, it's good as far as an indicator of overall manufacturing strength in New York, which it was good news there. But I think as far as the employment side of things goes, they actually do track the details underneath there. And it's worth noting that the employment index underneath that Empire Manufacturing Index is the highest it's been since October of 2007. And I would just say it adds to what I'll call the mosaic of data that leads us to believe that we'll actually see employment increases here in March when we finally see the official data.
One of the pieces of the puzzle. So, and the Fed says industrial production edged up too, about 0.1% in February. The Fed, Bill, kicks off its two-day policy setting meeting tomorrow, and all signs are pointing to the status quo. But there's this underlying feeling that the Fed will want to pull back on emergency measures that it put in place during the financial crisis. Any signals we should be looking for?
Well, I think you're likely to see some sort of language in there talking about the end of the Fed purchases of mortgage-backed securities that had long been out there that they plan to end them at the end of March, but there'll probably be some change in the language as far as more speaking to them in a little bit of the past tense.
But interest rates stay unchanged and all that, right? We think we'll be there for a while.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much a given that the rate stays unchanged. And we also think it's likely that even the language around extended period also remains essentially unchanged.
All right, got to wrap it up there. Bill Stone, thanks.
Thanks.
Democrat Senate Banking Committee Chairman Christopher Dodd today goes public with his plan to prevent another banking crisis. It's expected to put more oversight with the Federal Reserve and create some sort of consumer protection entity. Marketplace Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale is with us live this morning from Washington. Hi, John.
Good morning, Steve.
What do we know about this plan, Senator Dodd's plan?
Well, the most contentious issue remains just how much power to give that financial consumer entity you talked about. Democrats want a strong rulemaking agency to avoid a repeat of the financial crisis. Republicans are saying too many consumer protection rules would subject banks to regulations that aren't necessarily good for their bottom line, that pro-consumer rules could conflict with the safety and soundness of banks.
So is there any compromise possible here?
Well, Senator Dodd's idea is to give the protection agency strong powers, but create a separate set of regulators who can keep the consumer rules in check. Taylor Griffin follows all this as a banking consultant with Hamilton Place Strategies.
The compromise that's been arrived on now is that there would be a systemic risk council, a group of regulators that could veto with a two-thirds vote regulations issued by the Consumer Financial Protection Agency if they are in conflict.
Now, John, you've been covering these reforms for a long time. I mean, what are some of the proposals that sort of, I don't know, caught your eye?
Well, you're right. There have been several versions. Senator Dodd, in this one, is giving the Federal Reserve some new powers to oversee the industry, but he would make the Fed more independent of Wall Street. For example, the head of the powerful New York office of the Fed would no longer be appointed by banks, but instead by the President of the United States.
Marketplace's John Dimsdale reporting from Washington. John, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
In a deal that could spark some economic energy, Phillips Van Heusen says it's buying privately held Tommy Hilfiger. It already owns Calvin Klein. This would form one of the biggest clothing makers on earth. It's a cash and stock deal valued at about $3 billion. Shares right now for PVP are up about 13.5%. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Monday, March 15, 2010, at marketplace.org. British lawmakers could impose strict new rules to cut down on digital piracy in that country. Under a plan that'll be introduced today in London, downloaders caught with illegal music on their computer could lose their internet access for up to a year, and internet service providers could be heavily regulated. From London, Marketplace Europe correspondent Stephen Beard reports.
The bill is designed to hit online piracy hard. The courts would be given stringent new powers. They'd be able to block access from Britain to websites providing pirated films and music. Illegal downloaders would be targeted too. They could be cut off from the internet altogether. Alex Jacobs speaks for record labels around the world. He welcomes the British measure.
South Korea and France have already introduced legislation along similar lines to tackle online piracy. The UK is obviously a huge market for recorded music, the third largest in the world, and so legislation here will be another significant milestone.
But the big American internet companies are hoping the US doesn't follow suit. Google, Yahoo, eBay and Facebook all oppose the draft British law on principle. They say it threatens the openness of the internet. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
You and I have another month to get our taxes done, but for businesses, today is tax day, at least for those that file quarterly estimated taxes. One thing some of them will be figuring out is how much they've saved on their tax bills with various green incentives. From the Entrepreneurship Desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman reports.
State and local tax incentives can help a business save thousands on building retrofits, installing compact fluorescent light bulbs, new windows, insulation, and the like. Federal tax credits can offset up to 30% of the cost for installing wind turbines or solar panels. Roan Resch is president of the Solar Energy Industry Association. He says that's helped jumpstart the industry.
In 2009, we had a record year. Installations of photovoltaics grew by over 40% in the United States.
The government's tax credits and rebates are doing a lot for big industries, but not so much for small business. Steve King is a consultant at Emergent Research. He says most small businesses can't afford to install a new solar array or even green building upgrades that take advantage of state and local rebates.
Overall, small businesses haven't been able to take advantage of them, primarily because they are tax incentives based on investments. And the climate such with the Great Recession that small businesses have not been in a position to make those investments.
Another problem right now, you can't save on your taxes if you're in the red.
The tax benefit only helps if you're paying taxes, and you're only paying taxes if you're making money. And so the benefit really starts to take off once the economy begins to recover.
King expects more companies to invest in energy efficiency as profits return, and in states with strong incentives, they'll be able to cut their tax bills, too. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
I'd like to take a moment to wish .com a happy birthday. 25 years ago today, the first ever .com address, symbolics.com, went live. Until then, there had just been .edu, .gov, and .org. So what happened when the .coms joined the party? Brett Neely has that.
Without the 80 million dot-coms we have today, we'd be a lot poorer, says Robert Atkinson.
There are $1.5 trillion more of output across the globe every year because of the commercial internet.
Atkinson runs the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation in Washington. It released a study today on the internet's economic impact. When you think internet, Google or Facebook may come to mind. But Atkinson says the web has had a much wider effect.
In providing increased consumer choice, letting companies reach much bigger and more global markets.
That's created millions of jobs, but at a cost. The web has disrupted business models from travel agencies to newspapers. Atkinson says, expect more disruption.
We're not at a place where the technology and its application are what would be considered mature.
He thinks dot-com's next 25 years will be as unpredictable as its first 25. In Washington, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
It's been more than a year since Congress signed off on President Obama's $787 billion stimulus bill. Mr. Obama says the measure saved about 2 million jobs last year, and that's with most of the money still not spent. Adam Allington takes a look at how the stimulus effort has affected one Midwestern city so far.
$35 million in stimulus money is being used to turn this old munitions factory in North St. Louis into a new office building. Alderman Jeffrey Boyd says the project's one of the largest investments his ward has seen in decades.
From my understanding, there's over 400-some jobs, construction jobs, that's been created for this project.
But critics of the stimulus say projects like these have been too slow in coming. Barb Geisman is the Economic Development Director for St. Louis. She says large-scale infrastructure projects like these can take months to plan and bid out before jackhammers start.
So in some respects, if you're a distressed urban area, it is harder to spend the money because you don't have those shovel-ready projects sitting on the shelf.
Still, economist Jack Strauss says the stimulus has been beneficial for St. Louis and Missouri as a whole, largely by shoring up public budgets stressed by falling tax revenues.
The primary way the stimulus has helped is that it has given states tens of billions of dollars. And this has prevented layoffs, particularly in education. This is hard to see.
And with even tougher budget projections this year, Strauss says states and cities may be forced to lay off public employees, even as new waves of stimulus dollars roll in for construction projects. Strauss says it doesn't make much sense to hire a construction worker while laying off a teacher.
It's cheaper and it makes more sense to save a job than to create a job because the facility, the school, the police department is already there. So it's actually cheaper because the capital is already in place.
St. Louis city officials say work is finally set to begin on a variety of infrastructure projects, from bridge and street repair to energy audits for City Hall. The news comes at the same time Missouri Governor Jay Nixon has announced cuts in the state education budget of about $40 million, a move which would likely result in hundreds of layoffs. In St. Louis, I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
Google may pull out of the world's fastest-growing market over concerns about censorship. That's according to the Financial Times today. Marketplace's Shanghai Bureau Chief Scott Tong reports.
An exit would pull the plug on Google.cn, the company's search engine in China. Right now, that website voluntarily censors some results. For instance, if you type in a politically dicey term in China, like Tibet or Tiananmen Square, lots of results simply don't come up. Google CEO Eric Schmidt defended the practice 2 years ago at a press conference in Beijing.
Google intends to serve all of the Chinese citizens as best we can, and we think we've done a good job. The growth of the internet and the kinds of things that will be happening here bode very well for more communication, more openness. The direction is good.
Now, Google may be sick of the China rules, and the industry is prepping for change. Google employees in China are sending out their resumes, and advertisers on Google.cn are said to be bolting. A deadline for this saga may be March 31st. That's when Google has to renew its web permit with the Chinese government. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And finally, there are something like 40 scripts circulating around Hollywood to bring Bernie Madoff to the box office. The Ponzi schemer-in-chief bilked investors of at least $65 billion, and he's serving lots of prison time. The New York Post reports how movies about financial frauds and banks and brokerage houses never really do well at the box office. But producers hope the Madoff story might be a little different, and that there's someone in Hollywood who could play someone egotistical and money-hungry. Yeah, I'm sure they'll be hard to find in Hollywood. Hey, who do you think would make a great Madoff? Let us know at our website, marketplace.org, and share your thoughts with us, too. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.